morning. I am Chief Judge Davis. To my right is Judge Bartley. To my left is Judge Meredith. We're here today in the matter of Frederick L. Payne against Robert L. Wilkie, docket number 17-3439, to consider whether section 3.155B1 requires that a formal claim for special monthly compensation for loss of use of a creative organ to be filed before the board has jurisdiction over the matter, or whether the board is required to automatically address entitlement to special monthly compensation as an ancillary benefit under section 3.155D2 when the issue arises during an adjudication of a claim for upper extremity benefits. Would counsel for both parties please note your appearance for the record?
Good morning, Your Honor. Ethan Marin for the appellant. With me at counsel table is Jimmy Meyer.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Your Honor, Sarah Blackyard for the secretary, and with me at counsel table is Ken Walsh.
Good morning. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Very good. Each party will have 30 minutes to present your respective arguments. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Thank you. Mr. Marin, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Chief Judge Davis, Judge Bartley, Judge Meredith, and may it please the court. Mr. Payne seeks entitlement to the highest initial rating warranted for his disability of the bilateral upper extremities, effective throughout the period on appeal, which begins on July 14th of 1992.
Mr. Marin, I have two questions I need to get clarification on.
Mm-hmm.
One, why didn't you all just file the form?
Your Honor, are you referring to the form for a new claim for TDIU? For two reasons, Your Honor. First, the form is unnecessary. TDIU, SMC, and entitlement to separate ratings for functional limitations imposed by a service-connected disability are always a component of the rating on appeal. Moreover, new claims filed for entitlement to SMCK, TDIU, or separate ratings for bilateral lower extremities would not permit an effective date earlier than the date of those claims, or construed as claims for increased ratings 1 year prior. The record shows that Mr. Payne developed erectile dysfunction at least as early as February 2014 and has experienced impairment of his bilateral lower extremities throughout the period on appeal. New claims are neither necessary nor adequate to compensate Mr. Payne for those benefits.
Okay, let me ask my second question, and I'd like you to clarify your argument that you made in your brief. In fact, I think it's on page 11 of your brief. Mm-hmm. Your theory here of why Mr. Payne is entitled to special monthly compensation, is that connected to service connection for carpal tunnel? And if that is connected to carpal tunnel, which were in his hands, upper extremities, how do you get service connection for loss of a creative organ connected to carpal tunnel?
Certainly, Your Honor.
And do it slowly for me, because I want to make sure I follow your train of thought here.
Of course, Your Honor. The reason that Mr. Payne is entitled to special monthly compensation for loss of use of a creative organ is that the statutory entitlement to special monthly compensation is quite broad. As mandated by Congress in 38 U.S.C. 1114K, A veteran is entitled to special monthly compensation whenever a service-connected disability results in the loss of use of a creative organ. And that language, results, is broad. It doesn't require that the proximate cause be a separate service-connected disorder, merely that the causal chain begin with the service-connected disorder.
Right. So I have the same reading of that language. It's broad. Mm-hmm. So how do we get a loss of creative organ connected to carpal tunnel? Is there medical evidence in the record that says because he had carpal tunnel, he also has lost the use of a creative organ?
Yes, Your Honor. The evidence at issue consists of VA medical records.
Is that first, record 285?
Yes, Your Honor. Suggesting that the veteran's impairment of the ability to exercise due to his upper extremity disabilities has contributed to his obesity, and his obesity in turn has contributed to his development of cardiovascular disease, of which erectile dysfunction is a commonly recognized complication.
But that same medical record says that the ED is associated with diabetes.
A separate medical record, Your Honor, suggests that association. However, there's also a VA medical record that indicates the veteran's reduced erectile dysfunction may be related to low testosterone associated with his obesity. And the obesity
is not a disability, correct?
Correct. VA has, the Department of Veterans Affairs insisted in 2017 that obesity is not a disability. And in that regard, the VA medical record suggests that the veteran's carpal tunnel syndrome, through a couple of different mechanisms, may have caused or contributed to his erectile dysfunction. And that is the factual basis, Your Honor, for Mr. Payne's entitlement to special monthly compensation.
So let's just go over that quickly again. So it's carpal tunnel created an impaired ability to exercise.
Yes,
created
Your Honor.
Obesity.
Yes, Your Honor.
Led to or worsened cardiovascular issues, which led to ED. Which led to loss of use. Is that the chain that we're looking at here?
There are two chains, Your Honor. One being the chain leading to cardiovascular disease, the other being that obesity directly contributed to reduced testosterone, thereby contributing to erectile dysfunction.
Okay. So, but in either case, there are like five or so parts of the links in this chain?
Yes, Your Honor, there are.
And did you file a claim for ED?
No, Your Honor, we did not. That is not the benefit that Mr. Payne is currently seeking. And that is a crucial point. The board decision on appeal found that new claims would be necessary both for the board to ultimately consider entitlement to service connection for ED and entitlement to SMCK. The board was correct with regard to service connection, but not for SMCK. In 38 CFR 3.5155, the secretary made clear that no claim is required for entitlement to special monthly compensation.
Right, but that's why I didn't ask you whether you filed a claim for special monthly compensation, because I personally agree that you wouldn't need one. It is an ancillary benefit. But the question I asked was whether you filed a claim for ED.
No, Your Honor. The veteran did not file a claim for service connection for erectile dysfunction.
And wouldn't that be required? I mean, even assuming that you are correct, which I said I kind of, I don't want to give away anything here, but kind of agree with you that you don't need to file one, a claim mm-hmm. for SMCK, isn't there a logical predicate that before you're getting loss of use, before you can really ask for SMCK and loss of use, you would need a predicate filing or some kind of adjudication, even if implicit from VA, granting that the ED is in fact in this chain, in this, it is one of the links in this chain?
No, Your Honor, for two reasons. First, in beg your pardon, in the statutory language, Congress specifically declined to limit entitlement to special monthly compensation to those instances where service connection had already been granted for service connection, for erectile dysfunction, excuse me. And if Congress had wished to impose that restriction, if Congress had wanted to say, for example, SMCK will be warranted when a service-connected condition results in loss of use of a creative organ and service connection has been granted for that sexual dysfunction, Congress could have done so. And in fact, Congress did do so with regard to higher levels of special monthly compensation. For SMC O and P, for example, entitlement to those benefits based upon hearing loss requires that hearing loss already be a service-connected disability. But if I understand your question correctly, Your Honor, there's also that logical question of, well, yes, but does it actually does the service-connected disorder actually cause this problem? And that's part of the SMCK analysis. It's part of the analysis that VA is required to undertake whenever the facts or arguments in a case raise entitlement to that benefit. And in fact, VA has repeatedly emphasized in its amendments to the genital urinary rating schedule that the SMCK inquiry is complicated, factually nuanced, and not restricted to any particular disability. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
Not quite, but
I see.
Keep moving.
Of course. Begging your pardon. With regard to entitlement to TDIU.
Before we move on to TDIU, I'd like to ask questions on the SMC issue. So the Secretary's position seems to be that regardless of whether a form, standard form was needed for SMCK, the Board didn't have jurisdiction essentially because the relationship between the upper extremity disability and loss of use of a creative organ was too tenuous, that it fell outside the scope of the claim that the Board had jurisdiction over. The way I read your arguments is that simply by making the argument that the appellant was entitled to TDIU, that means that the Board was required to address it. So is it your position that by making the argument alone, you confer jurisdiction on the Board to address that argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Entitlement to special monthly compensation. Entitlement to special monthly compensation as another theory of entitlement to an increased rating can be raised by arguments before the Board, the evidence contained within the record before the Board, or both. In this case, it is both, but argument alone would place that issue before the Board.
And there's no requirement on how direct the relationship has to be between the claim that's on appeal here, upper extremities, and the loss of use. It doesn't matter how attenuated the chain of causation is, that brings it within the Board's jurisdiction?
It does not, Your Honor. And that is precisely because the statutory language in which Congress created the entitlement to SMCK is so broad. Now, the question, of course, of whether the the issue is before the board is distinct from whether it prevails on the merits. The board may address the issue and decline to grant the benefit concerned, but it must adjudicate that entitlement. Congress directed that it do so.
If we were to accept the Secretary's position, there has to be some kind of relationship between, close relationship between the condition that's on appeal and the request for SNCK. Is that a factual or a legal question of determining how closely related they are?
Thank you, Your Honor. That would be a factual inquiry, which the board would have to address. Although our position is that the connection, as long as it exists, is sufficient, even if it requires multiple steps, whether that, even if this court were to find that a tighter connection is warranted, that question would still be a factual inquiry that the board must adjudicate. Does that answer your
Let's just look at D2, the 3.155 D2, which says once VA receives a complete claim, VA will adjudicate as part of the claim entitlement to any ancillary benefits that arise as a result of the adjudication decision. If I recall, we spent some time in briefing talking, addressing that arise as a result of. But the end of that phrase is as a result of the adjudication decision. So what adjudication decision, in your view, raised the issue of the ancillary benefit SMCK here?
That would be the April 1993 rating decision that assigned the initial rating for Mr. Payne's upper bilateral extremity disorder. Once that decision assigned an initial rating, and that rating was appealed, entitlement to all ancillary benefits or theories of entitlement to an increased rating to which Mr. Payne was entitled flowed from that initial decision. And that is the reason that SMCK is at issue as contemplated within 3.155D, Your Honor.
So in your view, kind of no matter how long this claim strain is, and here it's pretty long, trying to get an appropriate level of compensation for the upper extremities, no matter how long it is, would it be safe to say that your argument is it would always be the initial adjudication decision that is referred to here in D2?
Yes, Your Honor. Just as with entitlement to TDIU, which is merely another theory of entitlement to higher level of compensation, once the appropriate level of compensation for the veteran is at issue, then that entitlement is before the once appealed to the board is before the board for the entirety of the period on appeal. It is not relevant that SMCK wasn't raised in 1993 any more than it's relevant that TDIU was not raised in 1993. In that regard, Your Honors, I would note that the veteran's entitlement to TDIU throughout the period on appeal was squarely addressed in this court's recent decision in Harper, in which the court held that once entitlement to TDIU, I beg your pardon, that once entitlement to an increased rating is before the board, and entitlement to TDIU throughout the period on appeal has been placed before the board, that issue of entitlement to TDIU throughout the period on appeal remains before the board, regardless of what the regional office does, unless the regional office either grants entitlement to TDIU throughout the period on appeal, or the veteran withdraws his assertion of entitlement to TDIU, neither of which have happened in this case. For that reason, the outcome in Harper should control here with regard to TDIU. With regard to separate ratings for the bilateral lower extremities, the Secretary has conceded that no new claim was required for separate ratings for the bilateral lower extremities. However, the Secretary now asserts that the Board, in fact, adjudicated this entitlement. That does not appear to be so. The passage that the Secretary's supplemental memorandum cites, this is at record page 29, in that passage, the Board addresses entitlement to separate orthopedic ratings for limitation of the wrist and limitation of motion of the fingers, but the Board repeatedly uses the word specifically to identify those orthopedic ratings. Nothing within this passage indicates that the Board addressed entitlement to separate ratings for the bilateral lower extremities. And the Board's language is particularly telling because it appears to parallel the language used in the September 2016 argument in which the veteran asserted entitlement to separate ratings for the wrist and for the wrists and the fingers and also the bilateral lower extremities. The Board essentially got 2 out of 3 on that portion of the argument, and to the extent the Secretary asserts that the Board silently reached that third issue of the separate lower extremity ratings, the Court should decline to read that conclusion into the Board's silence. begging the Court's pardon. Moreover, the Secretary asserts that entitlement to separate ratings for the bilateral lower extremities would have been precluded due to pyramiding, due to overlap with the currently assigned ratings for the bilateral upper extremities. However, the functional loss associated with the bilateral lower beg pardon?
You anticipated me, because I was going to interrupt you. So this is the problem, one of the problems I'm having, is that your view of how this should all work post 29, was it September 2015, when the new 3.155 came into effect?
Yes, sure. Yeah.
Your view of it and of the exceptions almost would seem to swallow the whole rule. And so can you just talk to me a little bit about when would A and B, really, when would they kick in? Like, when do you need to file a claim form?
Oh.
Other than after let's say it's a case like this where you're trying to get a proper eval and those claims mm-hmm. can go on for years and different aspects of the service-connected condition may arise, for lack of a better word, during this claims process. So what do A and B mean? When would you have to file a new claim form? After your original claim.
Thank you, Your Honor. This was a point that the Court addressed in Trove, in which the Court explained that where a disability gives rise to a distinct disability, to a separate abnormality in a different body part, that's an instance of secondary service connection for which a new claim would be warranted. And although the new 1.55 wasn't in effect in 2006, that would be a context in which now not just a claim, but a formal claim would be required. However, Trope also explained that when one disability imposes limitations upon multiple body parts, that is when separate ratings are warranted for each body part affected. And that's this case, Your Honor, in which Mr. Payne does not assert that he should be service-connected for disability in the bilateral lower extremities. He asserts that his upper extremities, because his arms hurt, and hurt more, crucially, when he walks, this constitutes an impairment of his functional ability to walk, to use his bilateral lower extremities. That limitation is imposed by the upper extremity disability. And per Trofe and Esteban, that is the context in which separate ratings are warranted for these separate functional impairments. With regard to the question, I'm sorry, Your Honor, does that answer your question?
You may move on.
Oh, sorry, thank you.
Mr. Marin, did you file a formal claim for the lower extremities?
No, Your Honor, we did not. The reason being that none was necessary, nor would one provide the appropriate remedy in this case. Mr. Payne does not seek service connection for a disorder in his bilateral lower extremities, but asserts that his upper extremities, his arm disabilities, impose a loss of function in the lower extremities. Your Honors, I see my time has nearly expired. May I briefly conclude?
Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief Judge Davis. Your Honors, the Board was mistaken, and this Court's decision in Harper confirms the Board was mistaken in concluding that TDIU, throughout the period on appeal, was not before it. The Secretary now concedes that the Board was required to adjudicate entitlement to separate ratings for the bilateral lower extremities without a new appeal. I'm sorry, without a new claim. But the Board did not, in fact, do so. And finally, the Board was erred in concluding that it did not have jurisdiction over entitlement to SNCK, which requires neither a new claim nor a specific grant of service connection for sexual dysfunction. We therefore urge the Court to reverse the Board's erroneous jurisdictional conclusions and remand for further proceedings consistent with that outcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Appellant asked this Court to remand the Board's September 2017 decision because it did not adjudicate entitlement to service connection for two new disabilities. Disabilities that were not filed with the RO, were not adjudicated, or appealed to the Board. Regardless of the language used...
Which disabilities are you referring to, Counsel?
This would be erectile dysfunction,
right,
and the lower extremity disability.
Okay.
Regardless of the language used in the September 2016 written arguments, these are claims for service connection for two different disabilities, and as such, the Board correctly identified them as needing to be filed with the RO based upon the new language in the new 3.155. Appellant's counsel's September written arguments must be interpreted as new claims for service connection for the following reasons. Special monthly compensation for the lost use of a creative organ is only an ancillary benefit to the disability that actually causes the loss of use. And if that disability is not yet service connected, then special monthly compensation cannot yet be adjudicated. Counsel's language in the September 2016 statement describes how the secondary service connection theory might play out and how the erectile dysfunction disability is what gives rise to the loss of use of a creative organ.
Well, you heard the chain of connection argument that appellant offered just a few moments ago. What's wrong with that chain? Are there missing links?
No, Your Honor. I think the chain very accurately describes the theory of secondary service connection that needs to be filed with the RO and adjudicated.
But that's not the appellant's argument.
No, Your Honor. He does not request service connection, but it is ultimately, as the Board noted in its December 2016 decision, a request for service connection for erectile dysfunction so that he can be entitled to the special monthly compensation that would be attached to that disability if it were service-connected.
The appellant's argument is that it's ancillary to a disability, the disability being the upper extremities.
Yes, Your Honor.
What's the problem with that argument?
It's not second. It is not caught. His erectile dysfunction is a separate disability. And even if it is secondary to his upper extremity disability, his upper extremity disability doesn't cause the loss of use.
How do you know that?
I suppose it's based on appellant's argument that I know that. It's the specific statement made in September 2016 where appellant stated that the veteran's weight gain has been exacerbated by his upper extremity disability, that morbid obesity that's been documented in his medical records has contributed to hypertension, which then increased the severity of his service-connected heart disease. And then the veteran also asserted that this cardiovascular disease is associated with his erectile dysfunction and that he thus has a loss of use of a creative organ. So
given the language in 3.155, why isn't that enough to connect the loss of creative organ to carpal tunnel?
It's because appellant's own language, Your Honor, demonstrates that he believes it's secondary. It's caused by a disability that is secondary to the condition. And the Federal Circuit and our earlier decisions have noted that secondary service connection is not part of this ancillary benefits language. So 3.155D2 is intended to continue the practice of adjudicating ancillary benefits such as special monthly compensation or entitlement to educational benefits based on certain levels of disability, but it isn't meant to eliminate the section of the regulations which pertains to secondary service connection. That is still something that appellant must file for in whatever context it might arise, as
so
the regulations
you're
state.
Saying it cannot be ancillary to carpal tunnel. Is that what I understand your argument to be?
Well, I think that's a medical finding, Your Honor, that I am not qualified to make, but I would say in this case, appellant's language demonstrates that he doesn't argue that it's caused specifically by his carpal tunnel syndrome, rather that his carpal tunnel syndrome caused him to develop a new disability, and that disability is erectile dysfunction, and erectile dysfunction causes the loss of use of a creative organ. So for those reasons...
Actually, what language in 1114K you read as saying that there has to be a direct causal relation with no intervening causes to get SMCK? Because the language of the statute says if a veteran as a result of a service-connected disability has suffered anatomical loss of one or more creative organs, you can get SMCK. There's nothing in there about the loss of use being service-connected or there being no intervening causes. It just says if it results in it. So what, are you asking us to read words into the statute there?
No, Your Honor. This section here specifically lists, so 1114K and all of the other provisions within this section describes compensation available to a veteran because of a service-connected disability, which means that the issue that gives rise to that entitlement has to be something that's service-connected. There's different compensation that appellant might be entitled to for pension purposes or anything like that. So if he's arguing that erectile dysfunction causes the loss of use of a creative organ and erectile dysfunction is not currently service-connected, then appellant is arguing that he's entitled to special monthly compensation even though the disability that causes the loss of use of a creative organ isn't service-connected.
Go ahead.
Well, what about counsel's argument just a minute ago that that if Congress meant for that connection to be immediate, kind of like you're arguing, under K, why did it then under, I think it was L, one of the higher SMC rates, why did Congress there make explicit that you needed to, I think it was blindness under, I'm forgetting what he actually referred to, but basically his point was that in the latter provisions, the higher levels of monthly compensation, it becomes clear there that you actually need an immediate, that the service-connected condition that results in special monthly compensation has to be immediately connected. You know what I mean? Like the ED would have to be the immediate condition that's service connected, and then you get K. So he was arguing that in the latter higher levels of SMC, that's made clear, but in K, that kind of immediate link is not clear, and so, well, you know, you don't need it.
Well, actually, I think that the structure of these provisions are very similar. They both start out, if a veteran, as a result of a service-connected disability, has suffered the anatomical loss of both feet, that's L. Similarly, the K starts out, if the veteran, as a result of service-connected disability, has suffered the anatomical loss of use of one or more creative organs. Again, I think the problem isn't that we can't have attenuated theories of service connection. That's not the Secretary's position. It's that if you are arguing, as appellant has in his September 2016 statement, that you have the loss of use of a creative organ because of erectile dysfunction or because of diabetes, as some of the medical records indicate here, and erectile dysfunction and diabetes are both not service-connected disabilities, then appellant is effectively arguing that because of a non-service-connected condition, I have lost the use of a creative organ, and then saying, but because I can think of an attenuated way in which that non-service-connected condition is related to the condition on appeal, I would like you to adjudicate that entitlement, even though I've never filed for service connection for the secondary disability. And the regulations, and in particular the regulatory changes that the VA made to 3.155, were meant to end these sort of hidden claims, the disclarity that comes with the informal claim process that was resulting in poor adjudication of a number of issues. By making the veteran file explicitly what he's asking for on standardized claim forms, we can guarantee a more orderly procession of the claim through the appeals process and perhaps even avoid a number of the stages of the appeals process where we debate about what is part of the claim, what is not part of the claim, when is the appropriate effective date, or all of these issues that continue to arise in this case specifically, but in many of veterans' appeals.
Your position is that it's too attenuated, the connection between service-connected condition on appeal and loss of use of a creative organ. Why is that not just a merits denial in VA's view, as opposed to making this argument that it falls outside the jurisdiction of the board? And how does your position reconcile with our, how do you reconcile it with our case law saying that if an argument is expressly raised, the board is supposed to address it?
Your Honor, first I would note that the board did address this issue after it was first raised in September 2016 in its December 2016 decision when it noted this argument appears to raise a new claim for service connection for erectile dysfunction. That's outside the scope of the claim currently on appeal and should be filed appropriately. This is part of the process of adjudicating a claim, is determining what's part of the claim, and the board thus put appellant on notice that this was a new disability, that the new regulations apply, and it needs to be filed for it to be adjudicated. But second, we would note that the argument raised might obligate the board to address it when it has jurisdiction, but the standards laid out in cases like Robinson cannot substitute for the board needing to determine whether the claim was actually within its jurisdiction. Appellant could have actually even filed a claim, say, in 2015 with the board for a foot disability, and that claim had not yet been adjudicated by the RO, still pending, waiting for a service, an examination, or whatever it may be, and he could raise dozens of arguments in his board appeal of another condition about that foot disability, but if the board doesn't have jurisdiction, we can't just say, well, it was reasonably raised, it needs to be discussed, because it hasn't been appealed to the board yet. And the regulations create that jurisdiction for the board. It needs to be filed, adjudicated, and appealed appropriately before the board can discuss the issue.
So in the decision on the appeal, though, they didn't say any of what you just said. I believe all they said about SNCK was he didn't file the form. Is it your position, it seems to be from your brief, that had there been, in your view, the correct disability on appeal, no form is needed for SNC? It's an ancillary benefit that should be adjudicated without a standardized form.
Yes, Your Honor. If the claim on appeal gives rise to entitlement to SMC, there'd be no requirement to file for it. But I would note that the December 2016 board decision actually indicates both to file a claim for erectile dysfunction and the SMC. So he has the opportunity, although not required, to explicitly also request entitlement to SMC.
So the board is legally incorrect in the decision on appeal in suggesting that the reason it couldn't address SMCK was because no claim form had been filed.
So I would have to take a look again. Sorry. Your Honor, the board is still noting, even in the decision on appeal here, that the service connection claim for erectile dysfunction as secondary to the veteran's service-connected disability still hasn't been filed. And that's why it cannot adjudicate entitlement to special monthly compensation. And that's the record at 5 and the top of 6.
Well, the decision says he hasn't filed new claims, plural.
Sorry, it says, sir, the veteran's representative submitted arguments in September 2016 pertaining to new claims for an effective date earlier than March 2005 for the award of TDIU, service connection for erectile dysfunction as secondary to his service-connected disabilities, entitlement to special monthly compensation. So it is noting this, but it's noting it in addition to the erectile dysfunction claim. So arguably, if he had filed and it was currently on appeal, the erectile dysfunction claim, and the board was still refusing to adjudicate special monthly compensation for the loss of use of a creative organ, then I think we would have an error. But here, I don't see the same issue, since the claim has never been filed, and the board is noting both the underlying service, the disability, as well as the ancillary benefit.
So do you read anything in the board decision that answered the question that you're raising today about was loss of use of creative organ ancillary to the condition on appeal, which is upper extremity disability?
I think arguably that this is the implicit denial of that fact. They're by saying, no, I see you need to file a claim for erectile dysfunction, and you will then have the opportunity to adjudicate special monthly compensation. They are saying it's not part of the claim on appeal.
Is that a factual or a legal question as to whether something is ancillary to the condition on appeal?
I think it's a mixed question, Your Honor.
So is it something we can address in the first instance?
I think that you have to look at the record. If it is a factual determination exclusively, then the board's decision would stand where it is saying by telling appellant he needs to file for erectile dysfunction, that's the factual determination that SMC is not part of this claim, it is part of this other claim that you have not filed.
So how, Ms. Blackador, how do you determine if a claim gives rise to entitlement? The appellant's position is carpal tunnel gives rise, or upper extremities gives rise to the entitlement. And your answer, I think, is, well, no, it doesn't, because the board says you have to have ED in order to give rise to entitlement for SMC, right?
Yes, Your Honor. The board is saying that the disability that causes the loss of use of a creative organ needs to be service-connected. Here, I don't read...
Upper extremities is service-connected. And their theory, as attenuated as it might be, is that is the service-connected disability.
Yes, Your Honor, but the board is making a finding here that this isn't a claim for... service or for compensation under SMCK because upper extremities cause the loss of use of a creative organ. It's reading appellant's language and it's saying that this is a claim for a new disability. That new disability causes the loss of use of a creative organ. And so even appellant's own language doesn't demonstrate that he's claiming erectile dysfunction, or sorry, loss of use is caused by carpal tunnel syndrome.
If the appellant hadn't put forward a specific theory and just said, my upper extremity disability is on appeal, I'd also like you to consider SMC, would the board have jurisdiction?
I, again, think that the facts of the case are going to be important, and in this case, they probably still would not have jurisdiction. In looking at the record. There is a lot of evidence, as the court pointed out during appellant's argument, that indicates that diabetes might be the most likely cause of this.
The board would look at the medical reasons for the loss of use of creative organ to figure out whether it had jurisdiction over the SMC request?
Yes, Your Honor, because I think at that point, based on the evidence in the record, even trying to generously read a lay statement provided by a pro se appellant, which is not the case here, the board would be looking at a case where the SMC is really standing in for a claim for service connection for a new disability. And so looking at that, it likely would be interpreted as appellant trying to file for diabetes.
But it sounds like what you just said is that you would essentially have to prove on the merits that SMCK is related or resulting from the condition on appeal before the board's jurisdiction would kick in.
I think that it would have to be reasonable and raised by the record that there was some connection between the disability on appeal and the benefit of SMC. That's at the heart of the reason we would continue to adjudicate ancillary benefits, because they flow and are generally obviously detectable based on the service connection claim and all of the development that goes into that. So all the development of an upper extremity disability claim might result in evidence that shows loss of use of one of his hands. And then we would be in the other part of SMCK. The evidence here, and the board even discusses, demonstrates that he does still have quite a bit of functional use of his hands, and so neither a higher rating nor that special monthly compensation would be reasonably available.
Would the board make that determination that the medical evidence doesn't provide enough causal connection before doing that development?
I think it's...
As to loss of use related to the upper extremities.
I think in this case, you would have to look at what is available based on the record. So if there is no argument in this case, assume that he didn't even argue for SMC in any way, it would have to look at what evidence do we have in the record that relates to the disability that's currently on appeal, and what could it reasonably raise. And if the evidence in the record doesn't show that there's a medical connection between carpal tunnel syndrome and the loss of use of a creative organ, not that carpal tunnel syndrome can't cause him to develop five other disabilities. And in fact, I think that this illustrates part of the problem with going down the road appellant's argument would like us to take. This could mean that if a veteran files one claim for a disability, that disability actually documented in the record causes two or three other disabilities, and he never files for service connection for those conditions, but he asks about special monthly compensation for them that is based on these non-service connected conditions. If appellant's argument wins the day, the board is going to have to adjudicate the entitlement to special monthly compensation for claims that were never filed, and this would effectively nullify all of the changes made to 3.155, which require that new claims, in whatever condition they arise, have to be filed on the standardized VA claims forms, because this would be, SMC would basically be a way to get compensation for a disability that you've never filed for service connection for. So, or moreover, it could require the board to just continue to adjudicate these claims that appellant hasn't actually filed. And while I think we generally assume that an additional VA benefit is a benefit to the veteran, it is also voluntary, and a veteran isn't obligated to file for all of his disabilities just because he wants to file and get compensated for one. And so, for example, if we have a case where a veteran has a physical disability, that physical disability has caused him to develop a mental health issue, and that mental health issue could give rise to some sort of special monthly compensation, and that's in the record, the board could now be required to adjudicate service connection for that mental health condition, even if the appellant has never filed for that disability. And that could have negative consequences for the veteran. Service connection for psychiatric conditions can lead to a loss of security clearances that a veteran might need for his job. Moreover, for elderly veterans who depend on state-funded assisted living facilities, their qualifications for those programs are based on their VA ratings. And if their rating is increased, even though they didn't file the claim, they could lose the state assistance that they've asked for. Moreover, if the VA... Sorry, Your Honor.
I know that 3.155 has changed, but the duty to maximize benefits under 3.103 did not change, and it sounds like you're trying to, by arguing this, like you could harm the veteran if you actually addressed a claim without a claim form, is kind of impinging on the 3.103 duty to maximize benefits.
Well, I think that those duties apply to the claim that's before the board. So if there's a secondary disability that hasn't been claimed, that's not part of the issue on appeal. The veteran can always file those claims, but that's the duties and the issues reasonably raised, the Federal Circuit's precedent in Robertson, these all apply to the issue that's before the board that it has jurisdiction over, the claim that appellant has already manifested an intent to file. And so if we were talking about, again, service, a special monthly compensation for the loss of use of one hand, and that could reasonably be within the range of a carpal tunnel claim, and the board had simply failed to address it, then that might be an issue here. But we're talking about special monthly compensation for a disability that appellant has never filed for. Moreover, that he was told that he needed to file for, and he specifically didn't. And the way the regulation has changed, it's not definitive, but it provides us with evidence that appellant perhaps didn't intend to file that claim because he was told that the only way he could get that compensation was by doing so, and then he chose not to do so. In addition,
switching gears just a little bit, I want to make sure we cover this. How does the Harper decision that appellant's counsel referred to factor into your TDIU argument, or has your position changed on your TDIU argument?
Your Honor, this would change the calculus somewhat, but in this case, I think that we can still affirm the board's decision without further adjudication, specifically because the procedural posture of the TDIU issue is different than the claim in Harper. In Harper, the issue had already been certified and adjudicated, the underlying disability, certified and adjudicated by the board, remanded back to the RO, and during that process, a grant was made. Here, the grant of TDIU was made before the first appeal to the board. It happened back in 2005, and the SOC was issued about 5 or 6 months later, and then appellant filed his VA Form 9. At this point, I think that it's possible for the board to make a bifurcation of these issues and allow it to adjudicate the claim separately. And in this case, to the benefit of the veteran, they were able to adjudicate TDIU within 2 months of him filing the claim, as opposed to 6 months later when they did the next adjudication of the underlying disability, which gave him the increased benefit much sooner than he might have otherwise received it. And moreover, in this case, we have the grant happening in 2005 and appellant retaining counsel in 2012 and not raising the argument about why he should be getting an earlier effective date until 2016 after multiple appearances before the board and this court. So for those reasons, I think that the argument is squarely waived at this point by counsel and appellant, having had many opportunities to raise it and choosing not to do so until 2016. Does that answer your question, Your Honor?
For the time being, yes. Okay.
Returning back to the issues with 3.155D, I would note that both the lower extremity and erectile dysfunction claims would not be falling within the language described as a complication in this section as well, because they are separate disabilities. To read a complication, the language describing complications in this section so broadly would effectively nullify 3.310 related to secondary service connection. And that was not the intent of this. Rather, it was to be a very narrow and limited set of circumstances, as the manual provisions that appellant points to in this briefing point out. It's things like a knee disability and the scars from surgery to treat that knee disability. It does not extend to the impairment of a new body system.
So, counsel, you heard my question to appellant regarding the lower extremities, whether or not they had filed a formal claim. He said no, and they didn't need to. Do you agree with that position?
No, Your Honor. The Secretary disagrees. The impairment that he's talking about is to a new part of the body. And he even starts to get into this when he's discussing what requires filing a new claim versus what does not. And when you talk about impairment to a new part of the body, for example, the creative organ, the lower extremities, you're talking about something that is a secondary condition It is not part of the same disability. Now, there are certainly times when we might rate a disability with separate ratings that affect multiple parts of the body, but they're very limited and specific to either certain systemic diseases, such as diabetes, or to claims for things like the residuals of a car accident in service or something of that nature. Here, we have a long-standing claim for one thing, for carpal tunnel syndrome. And now, after many years of suffering from carpal tunnel syndrome, appellant has developed new disabilities, an additional impairment, but those are secondary conditions and per the VA's regulations must be filed for with the RO.
So the board in the decision on appeal didn't say anything explicitly about the lower extremities. His argument that his lower extremities were impaired as a result of the carpal tunnel?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Is that something that we can address in the first instance, the arguments that you just made about why it wasn't in front of the board?
I think that they are arguments you can address. There's a legal question here about whether that issue would have been within the board's jurisdiction in the first place. And our argument is that they would not because, again, it is a secondary condition. And so having not been filed, it needs to be filed.
There's no factual findings that would need to take place to make that determination.
Well, to some extent, the court may have to make some factual determination about whether this is a separate disability or not. But to the extent that the record makes clear by appellant's own statements, not even really needing to delve into the evidence, that he is arguing about impairment of a new part of his body, not his hands, but rather his lower extremities, this is on its face a claim for service connection for a separate disability. Remand for the board to make such a minimal finding would not be necessary. I see my time is about to expire. May I briefly conclude?
You may conclude.
Because appellant's request is for service connection for two disabilities that have never been filed with the RO, adjudicated, or appealed to the board was correct in finding it did not have jurisdiction to consider these issues, and the court should affirm the September 2017 board decision.
Hello again, Your Honors. To briefly clarify a couple of points and respond to Secretary's remarks, first, we would emphasize that the court's decision in Harper was quite clear. Once entitlement to an increased rating is before the board has jurisdiction to all theories of entitlement for an increased rating to include TDIU, and no decision of the regional office can remove that authority from the board. We would emphasize that Mr. Payne does not seek entitlement to secondary service connection, either for erectile dysfunction nor for disabilities of the lower bilateral extremities. With regard to that argument, Judge Bartley, you were discussing the different wording, different provisions of 1114. And in our principal argument, what we pointed out was that there's a distinction between 114K and 114O or P. These are SNC provisions that turn specifically on whether, in part, hearing impairment is service-connected. There's parenthetical language to that effect that's distinct from the language in K or the language in L. So we would point out that these are instances where the language is not, in fact, the same as in K. It is different, substantively different, and meaningfully different. Begging the court's brief indulgence, the secretary emphasizes that our view, that the appellant's view of SMC creates an alternative route to certain benefits in addition to secondary service connection. And indeed, it does. That is exactly how the statute functions, specifically how SMCK functions. By statute, SMCK creates entitlement to certain specified, delineated, and fairly modest benefits as part of an underlying claim for a disability on appeal that ultimately results in these specified functional losses. It is a narrow entitlement. It is a carefully delineated entitlement. It is not an entitlement that leads to a cascade of incomprehensibility within a claim. Rather, it is merely an entitlement for the veteran to have these theories for increased compensation evaluated during the pendency of their claim, just as a veteran is entitled to evaluation of entitlement to TDIU throughout the pendency of their claim, even if that argument or evidence in support of it is only offered months or years after the initial decision on appeal. With regard to begging the court's pardon, an essential distinction to bear in mind is that between jurisdiction and the underlying merits of a claim. Judge Meredith, you spoke to this. The Secretary's position that entitlement to SMCK, that I beg your pardon, that the Board only has jurisdiction, only SMCK, when the evidence essentially already supports a link between the service-connected disorder on appeal and SMCK, this impermissibly conflates the Board's jurisdiction over a claim and the merits of a claim. If the veteran asserts entitlement to SMCK and the record simply does not support that assertion, the Board's responsibility is to deny that claim, not to decline jurisdiction. If the veteran asserts entitlement to SMCK and further development is necessary for the Board to assess it, then the Board's responsibility is to remand for that development, just as it routinely does, for example, in assessing entitlement to TDIU. The matter on appeal has nothing to do whatsoever with Mr. Payne's entitlement to secondary service connection. He does not seek it. He has not claimed it. He simply seeks to be appropriately rated for his service-connected upper extremity disorders. And such an appropriate rating, as this court has made clear in Trofe and Esteban, encompasses entitlement to separate ratings for the bilateral lower extremities.
Counsel, your time is up.
I apologize, Your Honor. May I briefly conclude?
Briefly.
Thank you. And for this reason, Your Honor, we ask the court to reverse the Board's jurisdictional errors and remand for proceedings consistent with that outcome. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay. Thank you. The case is submitted for consideration. The court will now come down and recounsel.
All rise.